I invite you to open your Bibles this morning to 1 Samuel chapter 27. 1 Samuel chapter 27. We're going to talk about when life exhausts you. Where's the hope when life exhausts? And we are entering an exhausting period of time, aren't we? Where we get fatigued by all of the activities of the month, having to do with Christmas and running here and there. It's maybe true as well that you're feeling at a state of spiritual exhaustion or dryness. It might be also that you're feeling a bit like exhausted through broken relationships. You're just tired of them being broken. You might be feeling chased around. Feel like something's chasing you? You got to keep moving. Maybe you are living a lie. You've had to, for whatever reason you think that you've had to deceive people, and you're trying to keep that deceit in control, and it's exhausting to do so. Maybe you've entered a period of spiritual darkness and you don't know a way out. Or perhaps you've suffered injustice or loss, and just trying to cope with that sense of loss is so wearying and fatiguing. All of those things and more are found in our chapters that we will be looking at today in the life of David. We'll be looking at four chapters, 1 Samuel chapters 27 through chapter 30. We're going to, the theme that runs through all four of the chapters is this term exhaustion, and how what we're going to learn is that exhaustion is the result of our seeking to build our own kingdoms. And that whenever we are about building our own kingdoms, it does get exhausting. Chapter 27, we're going to look at the exhaustion of being chased around. The exhaustion of being chased around. This broken relationship here, isn't there? Between Saul and David. David's been running around. Saul's been chasing him twice. David spared Saul's life, but he's still being chased and people are still betraying him. And so David finally concludes, you know what? I've had it. I got to get somewhere where Saul isn't. And he decides to go back to the Philistines. Now, he'd been there before, hadn't he? But he was there by himself, and the Philistines captured him, so then he had to pretend to be insane in order to get away from them. Now, he's got a group of 600 fighting men with him, along with wives and children. And this whole entourage goes back to Achish at Gath in chapter 27 here and says, "We'd like to join up with you." And Achish says, "Sounds good to me." Now, look at the verses here in verse 1. David said in his heart, "Now if I shall perish one day by the hand of Saul, there's nothing better for me than that I should escape to the land of the Philistines. Then Saul will despair of seeking me any longer within the borders of Israel, and I shall escape out of his hand." So David arose, went over, he and the 600 men who were with him, to Achish, son of Maok, king of Gath. And David lived with Achish at Gath, he and his men, every man with his household. And David with his two wives, Ahinoam of Jezreel and Abigail of Carmel, Nabal's widow. And when it was told Saul that David had fled to Gath, he no longer sought him. So this is David's plan. His plan is to flee Saul by going to the Philistines. And he plans to raid Israel's enemies in the south, the ones that he had protected Nabal from last week, and grab spoil from them. And then he'll give some of that spoil to Achish in Gath to prove that he was loyal to Achish. David's going to tell Achish, though, that the spoil came from Israel, not from Israel's enemies. He's going to lie about it. He's really wanting to prove his loyalty to the people in the south of Israel, but he's pretending to be loyal to the Philistine leader. He was, as the Middle East saying goes, making friends before he needed them. He made sure to kill everybody that he raided so that the truth would not get out. That's kind of a harsh answer, isn't it? David's long-term plan was to join the Philistines because war was brewing between Israel and the Philistines, and there was going to be a huge battle coming up, and David knew it. David's plan was, I'll join the Philistines, and when we get to that big battle with the Israelites, I'll be with the Philistines, and at just the right moment, I'll turn tail on the Philistines and join Israel in fighting the Philistines, and when we defeat them, then Saul will know that I truly am for him. It doesn't say this in the Bible, but I think that's David's plan. Right, just the right moment, change sides, proving forever his loyalty to Saul and to Israel. Now, as you can probably imagine, this plan of deception, lying, trying to live by your own wits, in the midst of being chased around by Saul and the exhaustion of broken relationships, takes its toll on David. He's exhausted. In fact, this plan falls apart in dramatic fashion. Have you ever thought about a plan? You know, you're thinking about something, you got all these crises ahead, and you think, I know what will happen, and you make the plan, and you make it work, and you're really trying to make it work, and one after another, everything in your plan starts falling apart, and you never really thought about the Lord and the whole process. That's where David's at. He's not thinking about God at all. He's trying to live by his wits. Let's look at it. Here's a little map that gives you a description of, so this is Gath right here, this red circle, and so that's where David lives with Achish for a while. Eventually, he asks Achish for a town, and so he gives him this town of Ziklag just to the south. The Philistines eventually are going to go up to this place called Aphek, where they're going to have a big, all their army is going to gather to get ready for the big battle between Israel and Judah, which will take place up here. So this is kind of their staging area for the big battle that's going to take place up here. Everybody knows this is going to happen, and David's part of it. What David's been doing is that just off the map, at the bottom of the map, he's been raiding people down there and pretending that it's coming from this area right in here, and given the stuff to Achish to earn favor and make Achish believe that he's a good guy, okay? David's not trusting the Lord here. He's trusting his wits. And while it's true we must have wisdom in this world, it's only when partnered with trust in the Lord that our wisdom is truly wisdom. There is no statement here in this chapter of David's trust in the Lord. He's not. He's trusting his wits. He lives in Gath, and Saul stops chasing him, so he thinks his plan is working. The pretended insanity when David had been there before from chapter 21 is forgotten, although probably having 600 fighting men with you doesn't hurt. And David pretends in verses 6 through 12 to raid Israel and her allies, but he's really attacking the Amalekites, who are the enemies of Israel that Saul had failed to wipe out. Remember, God had told him, wipe them out, and he didn't. And so they continue to be a thorn in Israel's side. Achish thinks that David has burned his bridges back to Israel. And so he thinks that he's really loyal to the Philistines when David has done no such thing. Look at chapter 28, verses 1 and 2. In those days, the Philistines gathered their forces for war to fight against Israel. Achish said to David, understand that you and your men are to go out with me in the army. And David said to Achish, very well, you shall know what your servant can do. Makes me think that by that little statement, he's kind of deceiving Achish, that he's really going to turn tail on him. And Achish said to David, very well, I will make you my bodyguard for life. That was how much Achish, this Philistine ruler, trusted David. The exhaustion of just trying to keep all this together. He's got to keep the lie up to Achish. In fact, so intent is he on keeping that lie up, he's killing everybody he's raiding so that there aren't any witnesses that would come back on him. The exhaustion of being chased around by Saul, the exhaustion of the broken relationship there. Let me ask you a question. What broken relationships are exhausting you And how might you be living in deceit? Planning on your own, coming up with your plan, is not going to solve your problem. You're only trying to build and save your own kingdom. Let's go now to chapter 28, the exhaustion of spiritual darkness. Have you ever seen a novel where you're focused on one character and all of a sudden the light shines on another character in the next chapter? That's what happens here in chapter 28. We've been working with David for quite a while now, and the question probably comes to our mind, well, what's going on with Saul? What's been happening with him? And chapter 28 is an answer to that question. And Saul is in the exhaustion of spiritual darkness. God is completely non-communicative. He's not hearing from God at all. He feels completely in the dark. Saul has become even more paranoid of David, and he's more intent on preserving his own kingdom. The more that the prophet Samuel told him that the kingdom would be stripped from him, the more he tried to hold on to it. Even as it's falling apart, he's trying to preserve it. His chasing David has taken away from the energy to try to push the Philistines back, and the Philistines have even made further incursion now because of this foolish chasing after David. The Philistines have only grown stronger. And so we come to chapter 28 where Saul actually consults a witch for advice. What is going on here? Well, let me give it to you in a sentence. No matter how bad things are for you, you can always do something that will make it worse. No matter how bad things are, you can always do something that will make it worse. And you will see the truth of this all around you. You look at people that are caught up in some besetting sin or an addiction or something, and they'll come up with a game plan. You know, this is my plan. You know, and it's always they end up trying to do something that they actually can make it work. There's no place where you can say, well, you finally hit bottom. Nope. Even at the bottom, you can always do something that will make it even worse. And that's Saul here. The Philistines had gathered in the east end of the Jezreel Valley. Saul is positioned opposite the Philistines at the opening to another valley. Let me show you a picture here. This is what's called the Jezreel Valley. You might know it as the Valley of Armageddon. Battles here all through biblical history, and there's a great battle that's going to take place at the end of time, right? The reason why it was called the Valley of Armageddon is because there's a city here called Megiddo. Let's see, I'm not pointing the right one. Right there. City called Megiddo, and it is the hill of Megiddo is called Har Megiddo. Har Megiddo. And so the valley gets called the Valley of Har Megiddo. The Valley of Armageddon, okay? But in Old Testament times, it was known as the Jezreel Valley because there's another city in this valley right here that's called Jezreel, okay? And at that time, that was kind of the prominent place. Now, it's a valley that looks a little bit like an arrow, okay? So here's one down to the point of the arrow here, and then here's one other side of the shaft of the, another side of the arrow, and then the shaft of the arrow is this valley that goes down here, okay? So, the Bible says that the Philistines were gathered at this place right here with the red circle called Shunem, and that Israel, Saul, and his men were gathered on Mount Gilboa. So there's just this valley across from them, very similar to the kind of gathering together, only in a very different place, that happened in chapter 17 with the story of David and Goliath, right? They're both in spots where they can look around at the hill and stuff. And this blue spot here is where Saul had to go to meet up with the witch. So understand what Saul had to do. Well, let me back up. What Saul had to do was he had to go from where his camp was all the way around past the Philistine camp to meet up with the witch. That's what you call a desperate fellow. So, let's look at it. The Philistines are gathered at the valley. Saul's positioned opposite. Samuel has died. There's no prophet, other prophets at the time. Saul had rightly removed all the evil fortune tellers from the land. Look at verse 3. Samuel died, all Israel mourned for him, buried him in Ramah. Saul had put the mediums and the necromancers out of the land. He'd gotten rid of all the fortune tellers, all those occult people. Philistines assembled, came and encamped at Shunem, like I pointed out on the map there, the red. And Saul and all Israel gathered and camped at Gilboa, the green there on the map. When Saul saw the army of the Philistines, he was afraid. His heart trembled greatly. When Saul inquired of the Lord, there were three ways by which the Lord had spoken to Saul in the past, apparently, but the Lord did not answer by any of these three ways now. He did not answer by dreams. He did not answer by Urim. The Urim and the Thummim were, we don't know exactly what they were, but it appears that they were like stones that you cast in a certain way that would give you an answer to yes and no questions. The best thing I can kind of come up with to compare it to is Magic 8 Ball. Something like that that you actually use to consult with the Lord about. And then the third was prophets, and Samuel's dead. So Saul comes up with his plan, again, not thinking about the Lord, comes up with his plan. Seek me out for me a woman who's a medium that I may go and inquire of her. And his servants said to him, behold, there is a medium at Endor. That's where the blue circle is on our map. So Saul disguised himself, put on other garments, and went, he and two men with him. They came to the woman by night. Why come by night? Because they got to get past the Philistine encampment in order to go around in the valley to Endor. Let me show you a picture here. This is an aerial photo which shows you the Philistine encampment is about here, and the witch probably lives right around here. Okay? So, all right, let me back that up. The Lord is silent. This can happen when we run away from God. We can't hear his voice. Sometimes he stops talking. God stopped communicating in his usual ways to Saul. No dreams, no Urim, no prophets. Saul disguises himself and goes around the curve there at some risk because he had to pass by that Philistine encampment. Now the woman is worried that she's going to be punished, right? The woman says, you know, verse 9, you know what Saul has done, how he's cut off the mediums and necromancers from the land. Why are you laying a trap for my life to bring about my death? And Saul has disguised himself, so he's pretending not to be Saul. He's kind of like, what's that TV show where the boss, undercover boss? He's trying to be that. And Saul swore to her by the Lord, as the Lord lives, no punishment shall come upon you for this thing. And the woman says, who shall I bring up for you? And so he says, bring up Samuel for me. Verse 12 is an interesting thing because what she had done in the past was she was a medium who brought up fake things. Whether it was demonic or just pure fakery, it's one of the two. It's not real. Imagine her surprise when she goes through all her rigmarole of being a witch and brings up Samuel, and the real Samuel shows up. She freaks out. She freaks out, not Saul. She's the one who's going nutso in verse 12, right? She cries out with a loud voice. She says to Saul, why have you deceived me? You're Saul. The king says to her, don't be afraid. What do you see? The woman said, I see a god, little g, coming up out of the earth. It's terrifying to her. It's impressive. He says, what is his appearance? An old man coming up, wrapped in a robe. Saul knows it's Samuel, and he bowed his face to the ground, paid homage. The witch is the most shocked of all here. Saul and Samuel then have a conversation where Samuel prophesies one last time to Saul. And these next few verses, 15 through 19, I think, are among the saddest in all the Bible. Listen to them. Samuel says to Saul, "Why have you disturbed me by bringing me up?" Saul answered, "I'm in great distress. The Philistines are warring against me. God has turned away from me and answers me no more, either by prophets or by dreams. Therefore, I've summoned you to tell me what I shall do." And Samuel said, "Why then do you ask me, since the Lord has turned from you and become your enemy? The Lord has done to you as he spoke by me, for the Lord has torn the kingdom out of your hand and given it to your neighbor David, because you did not obey the voice of the Lord and did not carry out his fierce wrath against Amalek. Therefore, the Lord has done this thing to you this day. Moreover, the Lord will give Israel also with you into the hand of the Philistines. Tomorrow you and your sons shall be with me." That's kind of a polite way of saying, you're toast. You're going to die, you and your sons. "The Lord will give the army of Israel also into the hand of the Philistines." Sad, sad verses, are they not? Then Saul, verse 20, fell at once full length on the ground, filled with fear because of the words of Samuel. There was no strength in him, for he had eaten nothing all day and all night. He was exhausted. No matter how badly you run from God, no matter how hard you try to build your own kingdom, you can always do something to make things worse, and that's what Saul did. Saul goes, "Man, I'm not hearing from God. I'm not hearing from anybody. I don't know what to do. The Philistines are on me. I'll conjure up Samuel." And Samuel says, "Guess what? Kingdom's torn from you. You and your sons are going to die, and the army's going to lose." Really a sad, sad story, is it not? And notice in this chapter how remarkably absent it is that Saul even makes an attempt to seek the Lord. Do you think that God's a gracious God, that if he did, that the Lord would hear him? And yet there isn't even an attempt on Saul's part. He has abandoned God and his kingdom for the preserving of his own. Spiritual darkness. Chapter 29 then shows the exhaustion of rejection and deceit. We're back with David, and the Philistines have gathered all their forces up at Aphek here. They've come up from the land of the Philistines up to Aphek to get ready for the battle, and David joins them, okay? They're with Achish in the rear, and the commanders of the Philistines ask Achish, "What are these Hebrews doing here?" And Achish says, I'm at verse 3 of chapter 29, "Isn't this David who's been with me now for days and years?" He's probably exaggerating that a little bit, but he's deserted to me, and I've found no fault in him to this day. And the commanders of the Philistines were angry with him. They said, "Send the man back that he may return to the place to which you've assigned him. He's not going to battle with us, lest in the battle he become an adversary to us. How could this fellow reconcile himself to his Lord?" They know the way he could reconcile himself to Saul was by turning on us at the last moment in the battle. They're on to David's plan. "Is this not David of whom they sing to one another in dances? Saul has struck down his thousands and David his tens of thousands." Man, that top 40 hit keeps coming back, doesn't it? It's a golden oldie now, you know? Achish calls David aside and he says, "You've been honest with me. You haven't done any problem. I've found nothing wrong with you. But the Lords don't approve of you. Philistine government was arranged around the five big cities of the Philistines, Ekron, Gath, Gaza, Ashdod, and Ashkelon. And the vote was 4-1, right? Achish was in Gath. They said, David's a good guy. The other four said, and a 4-1 vote, and we got to send you back, okay? The Lords don't approve of you. Go back now, go peaceably, that you may not displease the lords of the Philistines. David says, "What have I done? What have you found in your servant from the day I entered your service till now that I might not go fight against the enemies of my lord the king?" His lord the king he's referring to is Achish. And Achish says, "I know you're as blameless in my sight as an angel of God. Nevertheless, The commanders of the Philistines have said, he shall not go up with us into battle. Now then, rise early in the morning with the servants of your Lord who came with you. Start early in the morning, depart as soon as you have light. So David set out with his men early in the morning to return to the land of the Philistines, and the Philistines going up to Jezreel. So what happens is there at Aphek, the Philistines going up here to the battle, and David has to trudge the 60 miles or so back from Aphek through Gath to Ziklag. Okay, so he got up early in the morning, he starts hiking. It actually takes him 3 days to get back to Ziklag. Okay, the exhaustion of rejection and deceit. What spiritual darkness exhausts you? What kind of rejection and deceit have you faced that you feel that kind of, David feels a little, the hackles that are in the back of his neck, right? What did I ever do wrong to you, Achish? You know, you ever felt that way? That even though you yourself are deceitful, you feel the sense of injustice at someone being rejecting of you. You know, that's what's going on here for David. So now we come to chapter 30, the exhaustion of injustice, loss, and fatigue. Chapter 30, verse 1. Now when David and his men came to Ziklag on the third day, the Amalekites, remember the guys that Saul was supposed to wipe completely out, those guys? The Amalekites had made a raid against the Negev and against Ziklag. So Ziklag is where David's base of operations was. It's where he left his wives and his little ones and all his stuff while he went up to Aphek with the Philistines to fight Israel. Well, now he's on his way back. He travels 60 miles back to Ziklag, and he finds out the Amalekites had heard about David's departure, and they had wiped out Ziklag. They had overcome Ziklag and burned it with fire, and taken captive the women and all who were in it, both small and great. They killed no one, but carried them off and went their way. And when David and his men came to the city, they found it burned with fire, and their wives and sons and daughters taken captive. Then David and the people who were with him raised their voices and wept until they had no more strength to weep. David's two wives also had been taken captive, Ahinoam of Jezreel, Abigail, the widow of Nabal of Carmel. And David was greatly distressed, for the people spoke of stoning him because all the people were bitter in soul, each for his sons and daughters. Capture what happened here. They go up to join what they think is going to be this battle with the Philistines. Philistines send them back. They go 60 miles march. They get back to Ziklag, and the smoke is rising from Ziklag, and they find out all their wives and their sons and daughters are gone, and all their stuff is gone. And they're exhausted from this march, first of all, but they weep until they can't even have you ever had that happen where you weep until there is no more strength in you to weep? That is David, exhausted. On top of that, whenever something of a disaster like this happens, who is it that you question? Is it not the leader of the troop? And so all the people, remember David didn't exactly have Boy Scouts in his group. They were a bunch of ne'er-do-wells, people that were on the run from Saul, people that hadn't paid their taxes, people that had disputes and problems, people who were on the run from the law. And these 600 guys, they look at this situation, they go, well, there's one problem here. It's the leader. And they're even talking about stoning him. And David, it says, the people were in bitterness of soul, each for his sons and daughters. They're lamenting the loss of their little children. They don't have their babies with them. They're like, "Urgh!" Right? David was greatly distressed. It is at this point, after David has done all these things on his own, right? He's done all these things on his own. He left Israel, went to Achish, had this big grand plan of how he was going to save himself. The plan falls completely apart. And he gets back to Ziklag, and it's just ashes, and his wives are gone, and everybody else's wife is gone, and all the children are gone, and all their stuff is gone, and they're talking about stoning him. It's at that point that David finally says, oh yeah, I need to think about God. It's right then. Have you ever done that? You keep coming up with your plan and your plan and your plan, and it just keeps getting worse and worse and worse. And then finally you come to a place where you go, oh my, I need to think about God. Chapter 30, verse 6, last sentence. But David strengthened himself in the Lord his God. David strengthened himself in the Lord his God. Up to now, he was not doing that. He had no attention or focus on God or his kingdom. He was trying to save his own life and his own kingdom and come up with his plan. He did not think about God and God's kingdom. But now at the bottom, he did not do what Saul did when Saul was at the bottom. When Saul was at the bottom, what did he do? He did something else that would make it even worse. He consulted a witch. David, when he was at the bottom, what did he do? He strengthened himself in the Lord his God. What a contrast there, isn't there? You know, when you're at that point of exhaustion, you've got a choice. You can do something else that will make it even worse, or you can strengthen yourself in the Lord your God. May I commend to you David's plan. And so, let's look at what happens. They come back to Ziklag. I've already showed that map. Now, here's the close-up here. The green is Ziklag, and then this blue line here is the Nahal Besor. It's a dry riverbed. It's translated brook in the ESV, and that's a really bad translation because it doesn't even come close to being a babbling brook. It's just dry. And it's a rough spot. It's about 40 miles from Ziklag to that brook, and they're going to cross that brook, and they're going to try to find the Amalekites to recover their wives and their children and their stuff. Okay? Verse 7. David said to Abiathar, the priest, the son of Ahimelech, bring me the ephod. The ephod was a sleeveless vest that the priest wore that had an Urim and Thummim associated with it where you could get some answers from the Lord. And so David's seeking the Lord. David inquired, verse 8, of the Lord, shall I pursue after this band? Shall I overtake them? He answered him, pursue, for you shall surely overtake and shall surely rescue. So David set out and the 600 men who were with him, and they came to the dry riverbed, Besor, where those who were left stayed behind. But David pursued, he and 400 men, 200 stayed behind, who were too exhausted to cross the dry riverbed Besor. Get the picture. They had hiked 60 miles back from the battle of the gathering with the Philistines. They'd gotten to Ziklag. They have this terrible thing. They cry till there's no strength left in them. They get up and they start hiking. They go 40 more miles. They get to the Besor, and there's 200 that just go, we can't go another step. We just can't do it. David says, fine, we'll leave 200, the 200 of you here who are too tired, and we're going to press on. They press on, and they're probably going yet another 60, 70 miles. Remember, they're going, they don't even know where these Amalekites are. They're just kind of going out into the desert to try to find them, right? Let me show you a couple pictures here. This is Ziklag here, and I mean, look at the stuff on the right. It's really a foreboding place. And then this right here is that dry riverbed, the Besor, okay? Let me back up to right there. And so this group of 400 presses on, probably another 50, 60 miles, and they're trying to find the Amalekites, and who knows where their hideout is. Verse 11, it just so happens. They found an Egyptian in the open country, out there in the desert, in Nowheresville, and they brought him to David, and they gave him bread, and he ate. They gave him water to drink. They gave him a piece of cake of figs and two clusters of raisins. The reason the detail is there is to tell you this really happened. This isn't some fake story. Okay, the detail of how many clusters of raisins and a cake of figs. It's to tell you this was a memorable event in the life of David. And when he had eaten, the Egyptian spirit revived, for he had not eaten or drunk water for 3 days and three nights. So what that means is they had left Ziklag and they had traveled 3 days and three nights. That means another 60 to 70 miles out into the desert when the Egyptian got sick. And he's a slave of an Amalekite. And so the Amalekite says, the slave's not doing me any good here. He's just dead weight. I'll leave him here in the desert. And just abandoned him. And the Amalekites moved on. And this is where David finds this Egyptian. He says, to whom do you belong? Where are you from? I'm a young man of Egypt. Servant, that is a slave, to an Amalekite. And my master left me behind because I fell sick 3 days ago. We'd made a raid against the Negev of the Cherethites and against that which belongs to Judah and against the Negev of Caleb. And we burned Ziklag with fire. I'll bet you David's ears perked up on that one, don't you think? Oh, Ziklag, probably trying to be as calm as possible. David said to him, will you take me down to this band of Amalekites? And the guy is aware enough to know here's where he can strike a good deal. He says, swear to me by God that you won't kill me or deliver me into the hands of my master. Don't send me back to the Amalekites. I'll take you down to them. Meanwhile, in the Amalekite hideout, they're having a big old party. They're just having it. I mean, they are living it up. Verse 16, he had taken him down. Behold, they were spread broad all over the land, eating and drinking and dancing because of all the great spoil they had taken from the land of the Philistines, from the land of Judah. And David arrives in their camp, at their hideout, at twilight. And I want you to notice something now. They've gone 60 miles from Aphek to Ziklag. They've gone another 40 to the Nahal Besor. They've gone another 60 into the deep desert. And they find this hideout at twilight. And it says, David struck them down from twilight until the evening of the next day. In other words, there was fighting for 24 hours. 24 hours of just hard fighting these raiders, destroying them. Not a man of them escaped except 400 young men who mounted on camels and fled. And David recovered all that the Amalekites had taken. David rescued his two wives. Nothing was missing, small or great, sons or daughters, spoil or anything that had been taken. David brought back all. And then more than that, he didn't just get back his stuff. He took all the stuff of the Amalekites too. He captured all the flocks and herds, and the people drove the livestock before him and said, this is David's spoil. Now, think about it if you were one of those 400 guys. You traveled 600, you traveled the 40, you traveled the other 60, 40, another 60. You fought a 24-hour battle. You hiked the 60 back with all the stuff, and you get to the Nahal Besor, the dry brook Besor, and you meet up with the other 200. If you're a worthless fellow, what do you say to those 200 guys who, quote-unquote, were too tired to press on? You're going to go nothing doing. You guys get nothing, right? Well, we did all the hard fighting here. And that's what they say. Verse 22, all the wicked and worthless fellows among the men who had gone with David said, because they did not go with us, we'll not give them any of the spoil that we've recovered, except each man may lead away his wife and children and depart. They just get out of here. They're not part of us anymore. But David said, you shall not do so, my brothers. And notice how he describes this victory. With what the Lord has given us, he has preserved us and given into our hand the band that came against us. Who would listen to you in this matter? For as his share is who goes down into the battle, so shall his share be who stays by the baggage. They shall share alike. And he made it a statute and a rule for Israel from that day forward to this day. David's perspective from chapter 30, verse 6 onward has shifted away from the building of his own kingdom, the preserving of his own life, to strengthening himself in the Lord his God. And so what we have at the end of chapter 30 is David's description, or David presenting the spoil to his friends, the elders of Judah. Let me go here, back one more, sorry. All the yellow circles are towns where, that are mentioned here in verses 27 through 30. They're all Judean towns. And he's building an alliance. He's making friends before he needs them. When David becomes king, guess where he's appointed king? In this southern hill country. It's where his area of greatest loyalty ends up. Now, you might say, okay, great history, Scott. So what? So what? Let me ask you a few questions. First question, what are our problems? How are we like David? How are we like David here? Well, let's think about marriage for a moment. In marriage, exhaustion is the reason, a key reason, why husbands and wives treat one another so badly. You've been each at work in your respective worlds, and if your eyes are off the Lord, building your own kingdoms, and then at the end of the day, you give one another your worst, and you wonder why it collides. Because each of you are thinking, why aren't you here to help me build my kingdom? That's what's going on. Each is building their own kingdom. And when you are exhausted, you give one another your worst. Let me talk to the boys and girls here for a moment. Has it ever happened that your mom or dad went to a parent-teacher conference and they said, and the parent and the teacher said, "Oh, he or she is just such a wonderful person and they get along so well with everybody else and it's just a great thing." And your parents are wondering, "Wait a minute. This was my child? I just want to check. The name is Burkle, right? You know? What's going on?" Boys and girls, sometimes you walk through the day and you're working hard and you're exhausted, but you're building your own kingdom. And when you come home, you want mother and dad to come and fix your world and make your kingdom better. It's not your kingdom you're trying to build, boys and girls. It's God's. How about teenagers? Involved in 100,047 activities. Running hither and yon, going absolutely, really super busy and trying to achieve in every one of them. And all of them could be saying, "Pump up, build your own kingdom. Look at you, you're amazing, you're wonderful." And you're told in school, "You're amazing, you're wonderful, build your own kingdom." You come home and your mom says, "Make your bed." And you're like, "Who and what are me?" And the reason is because you're building your own kingdom and you're exhausted. And when you're exhausted and building your own kingdom, you aren't going to treat mother and father with the respect that they deserve. Parents, giving their worst to their children, both in time. "Would you just leave me alone for a second?" Have you ever said that? "Stop bothering me." You're building your own kingdom. And you say, "I'll give you almost anything you want if you'll just be still." That's an exhausted parent seeking to build their own kingdom. Or how about Christmas get-togethers filled with anticipation of joy, but can be very anxiety-producing? Why? Building our own kingdoms in an exhausting season of year makes for difficult relationships. That's how we're like David. We, too, are exhausted. And when we're exhausted, it's easy to seek the building of our own kingdoms and forget the Lord. But David found strength in the Lord his God. How does this squeeze out? How does this squeeze out in our lives? Well, it squeezes out in envy. We look at somebody else and the building of their kingdom, and we're jealous of their kingdom. It doesn't matter, their kingdom or yours, they're both puny. It ought to be about God's kingdom. It squeezes out in disappointment. Our kingdom, our marriage, our life has not turned out the way we want. Well, welcome to planet Earth, friend. It's not about you or your kingdom. It's about his. But David found strength in the Lord his God. And how does the world respond to that? It responds with the self-esteem movement, which is you go to somebody and you say, look at how life is so terrible for me. And the person says, you're right, life is so terrible for you, but you are a wonderful, valuable person. You're amazing. Go and build your kingdom. And then you'll be happier when you build your own kingdom. No, it will not make you happier or more satisfied. Your problem, the self-esteem movement says, your problem is that you don't focus enough on your own kingdom. That's not the Bible's picture. The Bible's picture is seek first his kingdom and his righteousness. How about Eastern meditation? Let's get quiet so that we can feel comfortable building our own kingdoms. Everybody's got their own kingdom. You can have yours, I'll have mine. We'll just meditate and it'll all be fine. No. The problems are still there when your meditation is over. The emptying of your mind does not lead you to the righteousness of God. That's how it squeezes out. So what do we do about it? What do we do about this? Well, let me offer a couple of practical suggestions. First, for the season, we have an Advent materials for you. Begins today, devotional guide. In each week, there are questions for discussion. I love this week's questions for discussion that fit in exactly with this time of exhaustion. Where do we find hope in exhaustion? David found strength in the Lord his God. Here's some questions. What does waiting look like in your life? How does the wait make you feel? Do you struggle to look forward to the future with hope? Why or why not? How can you remember the hope of Christ and the promise of the light to come this Advent season? You see how you can discuss this as a family and you can discover, man, we want to find strength in the Lord our God. Would you make use of this? Second thing that's on the horizon, that's the right now. But on the horizon, at the beginning of the year, we, Lord willing, as a church family, are going to read through the Bible in 1 year. We're going to do this using the ESV Study Bible reading plan. And there's, if you pick up one of these brochures in the long hallway, there's a map for how to do it, as well as if you're not used to using Bible apps, there's a printed copy of the plan that's available in the long hallway as well. But you're going to be reading from four different sections of the Bible every day, so you're not spending like the whole time of your reading in Leviticus or something. It's four different sections of the Bible every day, and it will take you about 10 to 12 minutes a day to do it. And in the app, you can even have it read it to you, okay? So you don't even have to, you can listen through the Bible in a year. I did that, not this year, but in 2017. Very fascinating thing to do. I would encourage you, if you haven't ever done that, maybe to give that a go. But the point is that Saul is looking to hear from God, and God's not speaking to him. Dreams, Urim, or prophets. We have every day available to us a feast for the soul. But David found strength in the Lord his God. And then I want to offer to you the words of Jesus in Matthew chapter 11. Come to me, all you are weary and heavy laden, I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you, learn from me. I'm meek and lowly of heart, you'll find rest for your souls. To look to Jesus. And that's what we're going to do right now. We're going to celebrate the Lord's table. We're going to remember who he is. He's the king. He's the king. We're not. And he laid down his life for us. Remember, above his cross, this is Jesus, the king of the Jews. The king dying in our place. His body broken for us. His blood shed for us. If you're a believer in Jesus, we welcome you to this table. If you're not ready to be a believer or follower of Christ, just let the elements pass you by. But if you are ready, pray this. Lord, forgive me of my sin by what Christ did at the cross. I no longer want to be the king of my own kingdom. I want you to be the king of my life. I turn from my sin and I turn toward Christ. forgive me by his death at the cross, and I believe he rose from the dead so that he is, not was, he is the true King of the universe. Will you pray with me? Father, thank you so much for the privilege that we have to remember what the Lord Jesus has done. And in this table, we are finding strength in you, not in ourselves, not in our plans, not in our schemes, not in our own kingdoms, but in you. In Jesus' name, amen.